Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday school offered for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.
I barely walk and chew gum at the same time, and so that's always amazing to me, see people who can do it. And so we're grateful to watch as people continue to grow in their skill and do it for the Lord. Praise God for that. Now, this past Tuesday, I know we had election day, we had primary date, and I always try to do my civic duty, and even if, you know, it seems like they're already foregone conclusions, because I can sometimes have some interesting thoughts myself. And so I went to vote in the primary, and I actually felt like I was in Chicago. I voted three times. Ouch, come on, stop it here today. So I actually put my ballot in, and it spit it back out. And so I turned it around and put it in the other way, and it spit it back out. And so I flipped it over and put it in, and it spit it back out. Turned it the other way, put it in, spit it back out. Ended up, wouldn't take my ballot. I said, well, it must have known whose it was. So they spoiled that ballot and got rid of it. So I went through the whole process again and put it in and spit it out. Same process again. So I went to the third time. And by the time, so I decided, they said, well, we got a problem, we're going to have to redo some things. And so I came back because I didn't have a long commute to get to the voting place. But as I redid it, sure enough, the first time it went out, it spit it out again. And so now a poll worker, of all times, the poll workers had to come over and they had to do it for me, which is great. But they kept spitting it back out. But all of a sudden I realized, you know, voting in 2024 is kind of a private thing. Because we have such strongly polarized electorate, and it's nice to have a sense of privacy so that you don't have to explain, you know, your thoughts, and we have all kinds of different thoughts, and we're not going to get into those things here today. But I noticed, you know, they have these cover sheets, but as people were putting it in, it's like, well, kind of everything I say is just kind of right out there, and I kind of sense I wanted anonymity. And I didn't, you know, it wasn't great that I felt like that necessarily wasn't there, although everything was fine and great and professional, but nothing like that. But I thought about that this week as it came to this portion of text, because we've been going through the book of Mark. And today we're going to see an individual who really wanted to keep anonymity. And sometimes we read over and we don't understand the why as to the desire of anonymity. And we're going to find some things that when we have a good Christology, a good understanding of who Jesus is, and the fact that Jesus is God incarnate, and when we put those things together, we're going to look at the situation and it's going to become a whole lot deeper. So that's my goal for our journey here today. We've been going through Mark's gospel. We've seen Jesus deliver the Gerasenian demoniac, and the crowd watched as this legion of demons was cast out and went into the herd of pigs, and 2,000 pigs rushed down a hillside and drowned. This kind of frustrated the people. They were scared. They urged Jesus to leave. Jesus told the Gerasenian man who is now delivered that he should not go with Jesus, but declare his good works to the this multiple city region here. So let's pick it up in Mark chapter 5, verse 21 through 24. Right after this, so Jesus has gotten in the boat after leaving where he had delivered the demon-possessed man. He says, now, when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him. And he was beside the sea. This sounds familiar, okay? This sounds kind of like where we started this whole journey in Mark chapter 4, okay? And so it says, and it then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet. Now, time out. Doesn't that just sound familiar? We just talked last week about this demon-possessed man who came and saw Jesus immediately getting out of the boat and came down and fell on his knees before him. And now we see the similar situation coming. But this individual was not possessed by powerful demons, but in fact possessed power himself. And he's coming to Jesus and he's falling on his feet. Now we know the why. He says, and he implored him earnestly, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she might be made well and live. And he went with him. You see, this person, what we know about this Jairus, so first of all, he's a ruler in the synagogue. And so perhaps this meant that he was a judge or a director of worship in the temple. And in spite of his exalted position, in spite of his service to God, trouble found him. His little daughter was now sick to the point of death. I think it's important for us to realize that his position did not insulate nor exempt him from trouble. In fact, his service to God did not shield his family from sickness. He obviously had heard of the miraculous power of Jesus as stories about Jesus' miracles spread throughout the region. And this drew him. And now this powerful person took on a posture of humility and position, and petition. I imagine what went through Jairus' mind as he came to Jesus and he asked him, would you please go? I'm in desperation. I need you to know that if you're here today and you're in a desperate situation, I believe desperation drives you to Jesus. And I think that that's a powerful thing when we understand where the answer is. And I imagine what went through Jairus' mind as he presented his request to Jesus. He was in desperation. Would you please come? Would you please lay your hands upon my daughter so she can be well? Because obviously this sickness was to the point of death. I imagine that in his mind, his heart probably skipped a beat as he was relieved to see that Jesus agreed to go with him. I want you to know that Jesus hears. Jesus hears our cries of desperation. And to know that Jesus is with you on your journey would bring a level of comfort and certainly a level of hope to a hopeless situation. Let's go on in verse 24. He says, and a great crowd followed him and thronged. Go ahead and go to the next one there. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. Okay, you're wanting Jesus to come, you're excited, and all of a sudden, that have people ever gotten in your way of trying to seek God? That's something that kind of happens. He says, and there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was no better, but rather grew worse. So here is where the conflict begins to come in. We see this woman. Let's consider this woman and a couple things about her. First of all, she'd been plagued by this bleeding issue for 12 years. This is a chronic condition. It was relentless. This is something that continued to torment her. And we see that she had spent all that she had to no avail. It's not like she just sat back. She made every intervention that she could. And in all of the financial resources that she had spent, she only grew worse. Her suffering only grew worse. It did not get better. And I'd imagine that the loss of financial status, the loss of her health, this was a major, major thing. Okay? Her physical health was deteriorated. Her emotional health, her spiritual health, because what we know is her societal and spiritual health suffered. Because according, if you look back in the book of Leviticus, someone who has an issue like this, there are laws about morality, there are civil laws, and there are laws for cleanliness in the law of Moses. And so if a woman was having an issue of blood, she was deemed unclean. In other words, she could not go to the temple to worship. So for 12 years, she was not allowed to worship. And it gets worse because according to the law, not only was this her posture and position, was she forbid to go to worship, but anyone who she came in contact with. In fact, not only that, if she sat in a place, that area had to be cleansed. If she had garments, those had to be cleansed. If you touched those things, Okay, so we're understanding that this is more than just an issue. It's a stigma. Now, if you read, as we read in Mark 5, we saw some troubling things. We know Jairus' name because he's a ruler in the synagogue. And do we know her name? No, we know her issue. And far too many people are known only for their issue. We don't even think about their name. She's now cut off from hope. She is hopeless. She is frustrated. The nature of this issue exposed her to shame as she was called unclean. I know that in our society today, there's a whole lot of premium that's placed on, not being judgmental and the hurt of feeling judged. And my heavens, this is an individual who feels judged. This is an individual who is cut off socially, societally, religiously. Those who come in contact with her even are called unclean. And so her issues have led her to a place of isolation. I bet that she is having some major, major thoughts going through her mind. Anyone who comes in contact with her has to go through a process of cleansing before they can go to worship. Let's go on in this story because now my heart's going out to this unnamed woman who is known by her issue. Church, I think that we need to maybe take that as a little sidebar. Know someone beyond their issue. There is a name beyond their issue. And maybe we as followers of Jesus are called to get beyond the issue to understand the person that Jesus in fact loves. Mark 5:27 said, she had heard the reports about Jesus. And she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if I touch even his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Well, just got three quick thoughts for you here today, and this brings us to quick thought number one. There are times that you must press through to get breakthrough. There are times you are going to have to press through. And now, what did she have to press through? She had to press through a crowd, but there were some other big items that she had to press through first. She had to press through her own issues, her own shame, her own humility. She had some obstacles that had to be dealt with. She had to overcome her fear. She had to overcome her doubt. She had to overcome her disappointment. I know when you've prayed and prayed and you have had an issue and you've sought treatment, frustration sets in. You begin to think, why should I even hope when I've been disappointed? Many people refuse to put faith in Jesus because yesterday their condition hasn't changed to today. And why do I risk hoping when I might be disappointed? That is an obstacle of faith. She had to overcome her emotions. Anybody here have to overcome your emotions? How many of you woke up this morning, you just felt like going to church? Oh, Brad did. Okay. I've told you that story before. I've told you that story of the boy who woke up and his mom woke him up and said, hey, it's time to go to church. He said, oh, no, I don't want to go to church. I don't like them. They don't like me. She said, no, it's time to go to church. No, I don't want to go to church. I don't like those people. They don't like me. She came in again the third time and said, now you get out of bed. It's time for you to go to church. She said, no, I don't like them. They don't like me. She said, you have to. You're the pastor. And so anyway, yeah. Don't be led by emotions. You see, I have one thing. Those of you who know me and you've spoken with me, I had one repeated conversation with my children and those people who I've walked with to help try to mentor. And this conversation is continually this. Do not be led by your emotions. Lead your emotions. Your emotions are based in the seat of your heart. And we learn in Jeremiah that the heart is deceitful above all. Who can know it? So we are called, and we see this being worked out in her life. She had an emotional obstacle, the willingness to hope again. There are times you have to press through to get breakthrough. Yes, there was a crowd thronging around him. And I know for myself that I've sometimes been at conferences and I really wanted to talk to the speaker, but there was a whole bunch of people around them. And you think, as much as you really wanted to, you think, I don't want to press through all that. I don't want to have to deal with that. They wouldn't really want to talk to me. I don't want to be one of those people. You know what I'm talking about? You see, she had to overcome that and say, there was something about Jesus that I got to press through. I got to press through all of this noise to get to him. Now, I ask myself, I say, why would they want to speak to me? And it's just not worth it. Sometimes, you know, you drive and you're like, oh, it's time for lunch, and you begin to pull in. Maybe if you're going to if you ever go to Chick-fil-A in Springfield, I don't know that the line is ever not all the way up to the mall. And you think, wow, there's such a long line. I don't know if it's worth it to wait that long, to go through all the hassle of pressing through. And then you get Chick-fil-A sauce and you say, it was all worth it. That is pretty good, isn't it? I'm telling you, Jesus is better than Chick-fil-A sauce. And that's, yeah. Some people understand what I'm saying, yeah. But here's the big question. So as I look at this, I always ask the question, why? What caused her to press through? You see, and I don't believe it's just that she heard about Jesus' miracles. You see, I think there's something deeper. And if we go to Malachi chapter 4, verse 2, if you have a Bible, you want to check that out later, we understand something about the Messiah, a messianic promise that says that the Messiah, the Son of God, will arise with healing in his wings. Now, so much of the Jewish faith dealt with symbolism and had these great understandings and even the clothes that priests would wear. And so we know that the wings of a garment was this outside edge, this hem, and on the corners was literally the edge here. And it's almost symbolic of these wings, okay? And traditionally, the tassels on a rabbi's prayer shawl were to serve as a reminder of the commandments of God, which called people to holiness. And so the Messiah is going to come. He's going to arise. There's going to be healing in his wings. And here she saw Jesus, believing in her heart that he was God's anointed one, that he was the Messiah. And so she's pressing through in her faith of who Jesus was to touch the outside hem of his garment and experience healing in his wings and holiness. You see, this is especially compound because every person that she would touch was considered unclean, okay? She was sick and considered unclean. Jesus, the Messiah, would have healing in his wings if she could touch the hem of his garments. This was the fulfillment of the commandments of God that he would bring holiness, and she was literally showing that Jesus can do what the law can't. The law keeps me separated from God, and now Jesus offers me a life-changing experience. But to get there, you have to make a leap of faith. We're literally seeing worked out Ephesians 2, 8, and 9. For it is by grace that you've been saved through faith, and this is not from yourself. It's a gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. You got to make a leap of faith beyond your emotions, beyond fear, and believe that he is who he claims to be. Church family, we have to believe God's word. We have to press through the doubt and touch the hem of his garment. Just like that old hymn said, he touched me and made me whole. So she touches him. Now let's see what happens here in Mark chapter 5, verse 30 through 34, because now we've got a problem here. We've got a problem because an unholy person or an unclean person has touched a clean person. Let's see what's going on. And Jesus perceived in himself that power had gone out from him. Immediately he turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" Imagine what's going through her mind right now. And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. Now, here's a theological issue for me. This is where having a biblical Christology is very important and understanding of who Jesus is according to Scripture. Because as I told you last week, if Jesus is God and if he is omniscient and if he literally can understand the thoughts going on in your head, and if Jesus doesn't ask questions to get answers, why does Jesus ask questions? I don't believe Jesus didn't know who it was. I personally believe he knew who it was and he was trying to get her to confront her shame. Come on, somebody. I don't think for one instance Jesus didn't know who touched, because he looked around to see who had done it. In other words, he had some understanding. Kind of like, where's Waldo? Aha. God might be doing that to you. You see, this is a powerful thing. See, either Jesus chose to limit himself and not know, similar to what God does when he takes our sin and casts them into the sea of forgetfulness and remembers them no more. It's not that God can't remember our sin. He chooses not to. So it's either that or he's drawing a spotlight. This is a big deal. She was appreciating the anonymity because of what it meant for her to be in a crowd. She would have made everybody who she touched unclean. That's a good incentive to keep a low profile, isn't it? She would have actually made Jesus unclean according to the law. So my belief is Jesus was putting an uncomfortable spotlight on her to demonstrate a very huge purpose. Many of us, many of you here today, really want to hide out in anonymity and obscurity when God is calling you to ministry. Hello. You want to hide out. Just keeping a low profile. Don't look. And you got good reason, because everything around might be declaring unclean, declaring shame. The demoniac earlier in chapter 5 wanted to get in the boat and go with Jesus. And when we read that Jesus told him no, it kind of seemed like, well, that's kind of a jerk move. Why? Because he was being sent back. Think about what he was going to encounter. Well, first of all, the financial issue of the demons left him and went into a herd of pigs. So you had a financial issue with a herd of pigs. The 2,000 pigs died, and now someone's going to have to pay the piper. Not saying it was necessarily his fault. Again, we don't have a whole lot to know, but we know that that was an uncomfortable situation, and I imagine he wanted to avoid it. And there are a lot of us who don't want to go to uncomfortable situations, but we want to hide out in anonymity, and I'm telling you, Jesus is saying, who touched me? This is a lot better than any of you are responding here today. I feel that I am in the house. Jesus is pushing something out. And just like Jesus gave a mission to this man set free from legions of demons, he is calling her to the forefront. For her, she had to be willing to stand in the place of desperate vulnerability to experience the healing of being covered in the shadow of the wings of the Most High. My second point today is you can't hide in shame when he gives you a new name. Boy, I'm a poet today, aren't I? See, everyone knew that this was an unclean woman with an issue of blood. And now, Jesus doesn't call her that. Jesus calls her daughter. Don't miss that. Everyone around, all the church folk may call her unclean. They might say she's a woman with an issue of blood, and Jesus says, daughter. That's a very powerful statement. Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. And so persistence and vulnerability were her road to wholeness and holiness. And we see something big. This is bigger than you think, because Jesus was now turning the tables. The law said that if there was uncleanness that came in contact with cleanliness, it would make it unclean. This is a big deal. Jesus is demonstrating how something holy contacts something unclean and makes it holy. This is totally different than everything that happened in the temple. Jesus is totally turning the tables and giving us an idea of what's called the doctrine of imputation. In other words, God imputes something different. So instead of worrying, you know, a lot of people, oh, we got to stay in the church. We got to keep ourselves away from the world. No, don't be stained by the world, but you need to go spread the gospel and shine the light. And understand that Christ in us does major things. Now, she could worship. This is the work that Jesus did on the cross. This is what is so powerful as we're coming to Holy Week and we're remembering the significance of the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus. Now she was able to worship because now she is clean. And she, as an unclean, the process that she went through is touching the Messiah. The limitations of the law were removed and she could experience peace. What's the big deal today is God deals with our shame. And how does God deal with our shame? He takes it to the cross. But that's not the end of the story. It even gets better. What about Jairus? You see, I imagine I kind of feel for him because I think that, you know, if you're dealing with a disease that is even to the point of death, you don't want Jesus to get distracted, even by other needs. But sure enough, Jesus is dealing with something else. Verse 35, while he was still speaking in the house, some who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not fear, only believe. And he allowed, now this is big, and he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And they came to the ruler of the synagogue, they came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. Now, if you kind of do some digging in here, I know like Matthew Henry's commentary talks about there's professional mourners who would go around, and that was kind of their job, is they would make a big show and understanding that something had happened. These are perhaps, you know, similar to the town gossips. Oh, hey, did you see what's going on here? Would you see what's going on? We got to keep everybody in the know. And here's what Jesus says. Jesus came and when he had entered, he said to them, why are you making commotion and weeping? This is kind of he's kind of poking at them here. He said, the child is not dead, but sleeping. Okay? It says, and they laughed at him, but he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went into where the child was. You see, Jairus got some news. Jairus got some evidence. And Jesus gave a command that was contrary to the evidence that he was seeing. Jesus would say, do not fear. Guys, I want you to know that it is a sacred place when God's word confronts our fear and life's limitations and the circumstances that we experience. And so what happens here? Jesus thins the crowd. Not many can walk with you when your pathway requires this type of faith. I want you to know that. Sometimes you got to separate yourself from the voices of doubt. And this doesn't mean only be around people who say what you want them to say and only be around people who will say what you want to hear, but surround yourself with these voices who push you to stand in faith in God's promises. So these three disciples, there's something even bigger going on here. These three disciples were given a special insight, and they have been separated on several occasions. They were present at the Transfiguration. They were present here at Jairus' daughter, and they were with him at the prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus had them, those three, have special audience to see these miracles, to let them know, hey, look, there are some circumstances that can look horrific, but you got to keep your faith. He was laying a foundation for what they would need in the days to come. Verse 41, and taking her by the hand, he said to her, Talitha kumi, which means, little girl, I say to you, arise. And immediately the girl got up and began walking. Praise God. For she was 12 years of age, and they were immediately overcome with amazement, you think? And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. What's my final thought here today? Is this. It's a simple one. Jesus can turn the tables on your impossible situation. See, we're seeing Jesus over and over again go to people in impossible situations. Literally, in situations where the law declares this and judgment has been rendered, and he flips the tables, he turns them around. This miracle, as amazing as it was to be held in confidence. For Jairus and his wife, I mean, that was a tough task. They already had the community already knew and had experienced that she had died. So it was obvious if she comes out, unless they keep her locked up in the house, that they're going to know something happened. Jesus was just trying to keep a lid on this. We can go in for another sermon as to the why in this, perhaps preventing a crowd from thronging in before his time. But we know for sure this, the doubters were silenced. For Peter, James, and John, an important seed was being sown that would soon be tested. And for the woman that Jesus now called daughter, her life serves as a beautiful image of the transformation that Christ brings. Church family, God won't allow us to hide. He won't allow us to hide in doubt, in fear, and he will not allow us to hide in shame. He calls us to experience a new life and a transformation through Jesus. And so this Palm Sunday, as we remember Jesus making his triumphant entry into Jerusalem, I just want you to put yourself in the midst of that crowd. And if you're one who would just kind of look for an entryway and just lay back, just watch him go by, you can't keep your anonymity. Let us come out of the obscure shadows.
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.